Welcome back to Through the Word. I'm your host, Peyton Jones, and today we'll be in the final chapter of 2 Kings chapter 25. If you had a time machine, what would you do? When I was a kid, we used to talk about going to the future and bringing back some cool gadgets with us, or maybe visiting the dinosaurs and hoping we don't get eaten or fall into hot lava, because, you know, there was tons of hot lava back then. When I was in high school, the movie of my generation was made. It was called, and you might disagree with me here, Bill and Ted's Bogus Journey, or Bill and Ted's Great Adventure, Part 1. Now, with The Breakfast Club, Ferris Bueller's Day Off, and Bill and Ted's, you literally have the definitive movies of Generation X. But Bill and Ted, they had a time machine, so that made them way cooler. Reading 2 Kings is like going back into a time machine. We already knew how the story was going to turn out, but we can see the steps that led up to it and gain some insider knowledge. You know, the fall of Israel and Judah holds some parallels in our own lives. You see, sometimes I wouldn't mind a time machine to simply rewind by 30 minutes and give a situation a do-over. Maybe you do too. Maybe you'd want to go back into your life and change some things and some decisions and unfortunate circumstances in your life. Now, I know these kings surely wish for a time machine from time to time. Remember our new vocabulary word from a few sessions back? Cliffhanger? Well, chapter 24 ended with this verse, Zedekiah rebelled against the king of Babylon. So when you rebel against the most powerful conqueror in the world, it's usually not going to go well, and you might want to go back in a time machine and have a do-over. Well, it usually doesn't go well when you rebel against a powerful person, and fulfilling all the prophecies that Isaiah and Jeremiah and the other prophets warned the kings with, the famine in this chapter is so severe because the army of the Babylonians are encamped around the walls of Jerusalem that the women are forced, now this is gross, so brace yourself here, they're forced to eat their own babies. And when the Babylonians finally enter the city, they walk over the bodies of the limp and starving people, in most cases, many of them dead. That's how sieges end normally, is if you can't fight them out because of the strength of the walls, normally you starve them out. So if you've ever read the book of Jeremiah or Lamentations, the one right after it, it's all about what happens here. And you can kind of fill yourself in on the warnings that the kings got, how they reacted to the prophet Jeremiah. And then in Lamentations, Jeremiah witnesses with his own eyes the horrific destruction of people and the city. And with it, he watches the promises of God be completely ignored by the people. But the good news is, they're never ignored by God. And Jeremiah still has hope, but it's not for no reason that he's called the weeping prophet. I don't know about you, but I was a little brother, which meant that I had a big brother growing up. And younger brothers get to watch your older brothers and not make the same mistakes. I watched him screw up, and at times I changed course because I thought, man, I don't want to go that way. And I guess that Judah should have seen all this play out like we have in 2 Kings and thought, I've seen this happen with Israel, the northern kingdom. Hey, I don't want that to happen to me. But nope, they go through the same experience, react the same, and experience all the same things all over again. It's a little frustrating. Everything is taken from Jerusalem in this chapter, including the temple gold. That means the buildings are destroyed, like the temple, and melted down for the gold that lined the walls of the holy place, including the palace of David. So in verse 13, the Babylonians broke up the bronze pillars and movable stands of the bronze sea were at the temple of the Lord, and they carried all of the bronze to Babylon. They also took away the pots, shovels, wick trimmers, dishes, and all the bronze articles used in the temple service. The commander of the imperial guard took away the censers and sprinkling bowls, all that were made of pure gold or silver. The bronze from the two pillars, the sea and the movable stands which Solomon had made for the temple of the Lord was more than could be weighed. Each pillar was 18 cubits high, and the bronze capital on top of one pillar was 3 cubits high and was decorated with a network of pomegranates of bronze all around. The other pillar with its network was similar. All that's left behind at the end is rubble, death, and rotting decay. Even the local governor that Nebuchadnezzar appoints to rule over the rubble gets assassinated during this time. It was a bleak period of history. But have you ever seen the game show parodies where there's two doors? What's behind door number one? If you pick the right door, you'll receive a brand new car, a luxury trip to Tahiti, and a lifetime supply of Vicks Vapor Rub. Ooh, the crowd says. But if you pick the wrong door, you'll get a pet iguana. Now, the anticipation of that moment on those game shows, the choice between the two doors, that anticipation for the audience is real. They try and play the mini game, just like you and I do, in their heads of what door they would pick, and they get to vicariously play through the contestant's opportunity to see what they'd choose and how they'd fare. There's only two choices, and it's an all-or-nothing, making the stakes seem very high. Well, the difference between that and salvation is that unlike those two doors, we know, we're told what's behind each one, and there's no mystery. The doors are clearly marked for us through the gospel. Choose all this, door number one, and you'll get God's presence, protection, love, peace, and joy, what we call blessing, or behind door number two, you'll get God putting you far from Him. You won't receive any protection. In fact, you'll get attacked. Instead of love, you'll have hate. Rather than peace, anxiety. And rather than joy, perpetual unhappiness. Or what we call cursing. Now, the right door has life written on it, and the other has death boldly blazoned across it. It's kind of an obvious choice. That's why Jesus said there are two roads you can go by. Not only did He say, I am the door, and you must enter through Me, but He said there are two roads, and one of them leads to life, and few choose that door. Why? I mean, I feel sometimes like reading the book of 2 Kings when I look at people in life and think, why are you not choosing the right door? Well, it's because they don't believe in it. You see, deep down, these kings in the book of 2 Kings, they didn't really believe what God said. I mean, yeah, they'd seen the Israelites fall due to paganism, whereas they could have lived, been, you know, they had seen miraculous deliverances from the Assyrians, and yet still didn't believe, even with living examples. But, you know, I don't know. I mean, God keeps sending these prophets, but I don't know. It just seems like I can do what I want and get away with it. And maybe that's the catch. Is that God doesn't punish you every time you do something wrong. But He says, make no mistake, be not deceived. What a man sows, that he shall reap. In other words, sometimes our consequences take months or years to build up before it's finally time to pay the piper. You know what? No matter what, sin will always give you a bill. And payment is always demanded in full. The good news is that Jesus chose to take that consequence. In other words, He chose to foot your bill, if you'll let Him. Now, I want you to think for a second. How many examples can you think of? Think of the people you know who are truly blessed. What's true of them? When I think of the people that are truly blessed, that doesn't mean a problem-free life. It means peace in their souls, peace with God. In fact, because trials and hardships hit Christians, maybe more sometimes. But that's a whole nother discussion. I've noticed they handle it better because they don't handle it alone. Well, appearances can be deceptive, and true, nobody knows this more than someone like me. I've been a psychiatric nurse, worked drug rehab, and seen countless people who look like they had it all together on the outside, but struggle with addictions and depressions. Maybe it's loneliness deep in their soul and nothing seems to fill that God-shaped hole. Maybe the teacher receiving awards from district, county, and even state has a gambling problem and can't stop getting further and further into debt. No, blessing truly starts from within and works its way outwards towards the fringes of your life. And some of the people I've known who are the most blessed are the poorest people in my church, but they act like they possess the world because they've got it by the tail. They've got Christ, and because of that, they've got it all. They stand to inherit the world, and they've chosen the right door. What about you, my friend? What if you could take a time machine and see yourself in eternity? Do you think that would change the way you make your decisions and live your life every day? Well, I can't give you a time machine, but I can give you 2 Kings and their examples and ask you, do you believe God at His word, like Hezekiah and Hosea? Or do you doubt? Do you think that if you pick the door marked death, you still might get blessed after all? Well, don't be foolish. Pick door number one, my friend. Choose the door that says life, for few do, but I hope you're one of them. Thanks for joining me on this study through the book of 2 Kings. I've been your host, Peyton Jones, and it has been my pleasure to walk with you on this journey through the Word.
Join us next time as we continue the journey, one chapter at a time. And remember, faith comes by hearing, and hearing through the Word.